And welcome back to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for June 1999. This is your editor, Fred Volby, in the SheRock Announce booth with your magazine and convention information on the 1999 National Radio Club Convention. You know, it's your chance to begin the autumn DX season in one of the best places that we can imagine in the whole country. Now just think, no big city radio stations for miles and miles. And pests? None. That's right. Bridgeport has no AM radio stations. Well, that is until Labor Day weekend. And Clarksburg, several miles away, has just two AM stations with night operations, and they're both 1,000 watters. Where else can you get away from it all for a terrific weekend in the beautiful hills of West Virginia with new and old friends who share the same hobby as you do? Now, it all starts Friday, September 3rd. We'll have a reception program in the evening that you won't want to miss when Bill and Brenda Swagger get things rolling for the weekend. Saturday is a time for the DXers to get out and get around, and the ladies, too, will have a wonderful time in nearby Clarksburg at the Italian Heritage Day celebration. And for those who attended the craft fair and Civil War reenactment when we met in Bridgeport during the 1991 convention, they're still talking about it. But the real fun, of course, is meeting many of the National Radio Club members that you've read about, heard here on the DX Audio Service, and who have become such familiar names in the hobby. Many of them who have attended these conventions in the past will be able to help you keep on track, too. And our tried and true receptionists, John and Linda Bowker, will also give you some advice and information along the way. So come on out Friday, and if possible, plan to stay a full day for activities on Saturday and Sunday. Now, Sunday morning, we'll have the annual National Radio Club Test. It's loads of fun. Those interested in the DX Audio Service can attend a live taping of portions of the 1999 October travelogue. And in between the scheduled events, relax and meet and just chat with the people who share this wonderful hobby with you. It's a real neat time for all of us. Very important, let Bill and Brenda Swagger know that you're coming by August the 1st because they have to give the Holiday Inn a pretty good count of the attendees for the convention. Now, here's the details. The hotel is the Holiday Inn, located at 100 Lodgeville Road, that's L-O-D-G-E-V-I-L-L-E Road, in Bridgeport, B-R-I-D-G-E, P-O-R-T, West Virginia, 26330. Their telephone number is area code 304-842-5411. Room rate is $70.85, and this includes tax for the room with two double beds and no limit mentioned on how many could be in the room. Reservations must be made by August the 13th, 1999, to guarantee this rate. Be sure to call the Bridgeport Holiday Inn direct and not through the 800 number to get the special low rate and tell them that you're with the National Radio Club Convention. As far as the convention registration, it's $35 up to August the 1st and includes the Saturday banquet, the business meeting, the auction, Sunday breakfast with all the soda and snacks that you can snarf down during the weekend. But again, please register by August the 1st so we can have enough hotel rooms reserved. Registration after August 1st is $40. Your registration should include your name and the name of any guest and payment for the convention. Send that to Mr. Bill Swiger, S-W-I-G-E-R, at 1 Casey Lane, that's O-N-E, Casey, C-A-S-E-Y, Lane, Bridgeport, West Virginia, 26330. If you have any questions, you can contact Bill at area code 304-842-4635, preferably in the early evening and in the same time of the day. Prepaid calls, please, and auction items should be sent to the same address. Travel by air, you can fly in U.S. Air into Clarksburg and take taxis from there to Bridgeport. Experienced travelers in and out of Bridgeport also find it's usually as easy and less expensive to rent a car in Pittsburgh or Columbus and drive to Bridgeport. Travel by bus, Greyhound has daily service from Baltimore, Charleston, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Washington. Hope to see you at the 1999 National Radio Club Convention.
Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby.
Hi, DXers and radio buffs. Welcome to your June 1999 Market Scope. This month, we return to Plant City, Florida, with the newly married Mark Marino. Congratulations, Mark. I wish you and Sandra many happy years together and a lot of great DX. So we join Mark as we travel up the FM dial, starting with Arrow 95.5.
Arrow 95.9 Supertram taking a long way home. Good morning, 826, 26 minutes past 8 o'clock with the Arrow Morning Show. I'm Muff.
I'm Chirk.
We're Chirk and Muff.
Murph and Chuck
in the Cantina Morning Show.
That's correct, my little chemo subby buddy.
Hey, it's time for the Arrow Morning Mind Trap, where you guess the question and we give you valuable prizes.
They don't guess the question, they try to go for the answer.
It'd be much more difficult. We wouldn't have to give away so many prizes.
What do I look like, Alex Trebek here? This ain't Jeopardy.
All right. Question. Crystal Country Breakfast for Two includes eggs. Your choice of ham, bacon, or sausage, grits, or hash browns, toast, or biscuit and beverage. Woo!
That really sounds good right now.
Yes, it does.
But we'll give our listeners a chance to have it.
All right.
Rock and roll related.
Rock and roll related.
Who is the only musician to tour with Elvis, the Beatles, and the Eagles? Now, should I leave it at that, or should I give you a hint?
Yeah. Elvis, the Beatles, and the Eagles. Give us a hint.
All right. He's dead.
He's a dead man.
And I'll give you another hint. One of his songs was turned into a movie. That's all I'm going to tell you.
The title of a song was turned into a movie.
One of his songs was turned into a movie.
Okay. There you have it, 9140959. He toured with Elvis, he toured with the Eagles, he toured with the Beatles.
Right.
And one of the song titles was turned into a movie and he's dead.
Who is it?
Give us a call now. Good luck. You could win. Bye. Arrow.
Citizens of Panama City, I recently did something very inappropriate, and I very deeply regret it. It seems I put way too much money down on a new car.
The Hogsnest Grill and Spirits at the foot of the Massalina Bayou Bridge. Follow the Hawk to find the greatest pleasures in Panama City.
All right, 8:29, 29 minutes past 8 o'clock right now, and why does everything sound like this?
Because we're in the middle.
Ooh, it does sound weird.
Yeah.
What did we do?
I don't know.
Something strange. Something happened differently.
We blew up the system. We're in the middle of the morning mind trap. What we're trying to find out is, who is the only musician to tour with Elvis, the Beatles, and the Eagles? And we gave a couple of hints, too. One of the songs was turned into a movie, and the other hint was that he's dead. Who is it?
Hey, you know, since nobody's really awake Monday morning.
No, that's not right.
No.
Try again. Wait a minute. Hold on. See.
We broke it.
I think it's broken. It's gone.
All right.
History.
Well.
All right. Anyway.
We got the right answer.
Robert won.
It was Robert Nelkin. He guessed that it was, well, let's say the movie first. The movie, one of the songs that was turned into a movie was
Pretty Woman.
Yeah, so that would mean it was Roy Orbison.
That's right. So Roy Orbison was the winner. He won himself, Robert won Crystal Country Breakfast for Two with the Arrow Morning Mind Trap on Arrow 95.9.
Don't be offended. They've always been this way.
What, Bart? It's 6 a.m.
The Arrow Morning Show on Arrow 95.9.
Our next station features alternative rock and Howard Stern.
From the top of the Howard Stern building, this is New Rock, 97X Panama City.
The show!
Some people prefer bow and arrow.
We prefer a grenade launcher.
Pure Rock 97X.
Seymour, and it was very, very cool, and she's still very, very cool, and man, after this album, they pretty much went downhill. However, there is a brand new Guns N' Roses out, band-wise, okay? They're getting together, and they're going to do an album, and only original member though is Axl. That kind of sucks, but here's November Rain from Use Your Illusion 1. It's 97X.
Rob Roberts, damn it.
97X.
Sunny, 98.5. Continuous all favorite, 728. Charlie, Derek, Amy Hoyt, you want to hear something about As Cute As It Gets?
I do.
Well, here you go then.
I would like to sing You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog.
Well, I think you should. You want me to help you or you want to just do it yourself?
You can help me if you want.
Okay, I'll get it started then, okay?
Okay.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Cry, don't
pass. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
And you ain't no friend of mine.
You ain't never caught a rabbit.
And you ain't no friend of mine.
I love the way she is. You can if you want to.
How cute is that?
There's nothing cuter than a southern kid.
You got your new sidekick.
I do. She sounded good. Victoria there.
Oh. Well, good morning, everybody. This is Amy Hoyt with Sunny 98.5. Continuing morning news. It is sunny right now, 75 degrees. Here's what's coming up in the news in just about 30 minutes. Some power poles knocked down yesterday on Highway 231 in a chain reaction.
That's your latest Sunny 98.5 forecast. I'm meteorologist James Howard from the Storm Team 13 Weather Lab.
Thanks, James. We will enjoy the day. Sunny sky, 75 degrees, and it's 7:30. This is Amy Hoyt with Sunny 98.5, continuing morning news.
Sunny 98.5 is online at www.panamaradio.com.
Continuous soft favorites.
Sunny 98.5.
Continuous all favorites. Charlie Dirk, 738, 85 for the high today. Another beautiful day coming on for today. It's 75 here at Sunny 98.5. All right, now, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, everybody don't weird out on us here because the Panama City Fire Department's going to be sounding the sirens on all the trucks and all the stations throughout the city. As a matter of fact, it's going to be a nationwide thing tomorrow at 6. It's the first time that the U.S. and Canada has done this, and it's just a massive fire drill is what it is. And the main thing they want us to do is to join in by designing and practicing home escape plans. You know, we're so used to having hurricanes around here. We know what to do during a hurricane. We know what to do during a tornado. But what about a fire? You know, you can't run into the bathroom when you're having a fire. That's really not a bad idea to at least go through it in your mind. Now, if you're not able to do it, I don't think we're going to be able to do that at 6 o'clock tomorrow night when they've got it planned. But, you know, it's a really good idea to know what you're going to do because, God forbid, something go to burning in your house and stuff. And, you know, you got to have that plan. It's a big deal, so tomorrow at 6 o'clock, when you hear all that going off, it's not World War III, it's just the Panama City Fire Department getting together with all the fire departments across the country, including Canada, and sounding off their sirens. That's on the trucks and the station throughout the city tomorrow at 6. 7:39, it's Sunny 98.5. Waking up can
be a chore. All events are free and down by the seaside.
Okay, I know. I just caught it. For those who know the market, I messed up. I forgot the good old country station at 96.9.
So anyway, I hope folks will go check out the album, and especially that song, because I think that's one of the best songs I've ever heard.
All right, look for it. It's on Lyric Street, and it's called Stepping Stone is the name of the album. Well, we're about to play your brand new song, Take Me.
Oh, great.
Can you introduce it for us?
I'm sorry?
Can you introduce the song for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Hey, y'all, this is Laurie White saying good morning to all the folks there. And I hope you like my new single. It's called Take Me.
Country 96.9, your 12 in a row station. That's Mrs. Chuck Cannon, also known as Laurie White. And that's her brand new one. It's called Take Me. And we sure appreciate her calling. I didn't know she was calling today, did you?
Well, she's a neat lady. Well, I talked to her yesterday, so.
Okay.
Sure you did.
You know, look right here, Jer. I got her home phone number.
Yeah, we got her. See, we're in good shape now. We're collecting these numbers. We're going to be tormenting these people.
Anytime. You know, this way, if I get busted in Nashville on some... Yeah. Heinous crime.
Yep. So now we've got Lori White's home number. We got Chad Brock's home number.
I can call for bail.
We got Clint Daniels' cell phone. So
that was a big mistake.
Yeah, we'll be tormenting these guys as the years progress.
I'm going to rip this up and save it.
That goes in the Rolodex. All right, on the way, we're going to be hearing from Vince Gill on the Breakfast Bunch. And don't forget, we have not yet played the Dothan Motor Company Cash Song of the Day this morning. So if you hear that song, be caller number 15. How much we got?
$100 this morning.
So caller 15, when you hear the cash song of the day, you will win $100. And the forecast is kind of iffy today.
Yeah,
man.
Cloudy and muggy. We'll be up to a high of about 85 or 86. I think we'll see some scattered showers and thunderstorms later today. And more rain tonight and tomorrow.
All right, Breakfast Bunch weather for Dothan Glass Company. The clear difference in auto glass repair at 655 South Oat Street. Right here in Dothan. Got Vince Gill on the way, as we mentioned, and the brand new one from Black Hawk is coming up next at Country 96.9.
Replace your old roof now.
Between Kmart and North UI.
On the Breakfast Bunch, it is 8:23 now. Boy, it's just been a day of special guests on the phone. We had Lori White on just a couple of minutes ago, and now joining us all the way from his home in beautiful Two Egg, Florida, Deacon Paul Brown for the Mount Ryland Baptist Church in Two Egg. Good morning, Deacon Brown.
Well, good morning. I want to tell you, Tom and Jarvis, our whole little community down here at Two Egg.
It's Panama City's Bad Girl, Chic 99.3, 8 minutes after 9 o'clock Tuesday morning. Lenny Kravitz. Creep, it's Radiohead. Lenny Kravitz gave us Fly Away as well. Q Magazine asked Lenny Kravitz, you know, considering his football season, what professional football player he identifies with the most. And Lenny said that he doesn't know a damn thing about football. But if you're talking about athletes, he thinks that he identifies with Dennis Rodman probably the most, because Dennis Rodman, according to Lenny Kravitz, is trying to look like Lenny. Lenny said that Dennis definitely has the Lenny Kravitz thing going on and strives more every day to be like Lenny Kravitz. I don't think Dennis strives to be like anyone, but this is my opinion. Good Tuesday to you. How you doing? This is Ben Folds 5. After 9, here's the Bad Girl, Chic 99.3. This is new for Garbage.
The call letter.
WSHF.
The format.
Alternative.
The station.
Chic 99.3.
The Bad Girl of Clear Channel Communication.
Panama City has a lot of variety on FM, including this Christian contemporary radio station at 100.3.
Thanks for turning on FM 100. We're WPCF.
Positive music station, FM 100 Christian Radio, WPCF. Big Fish from FFH. And again, congratulations going out to David Smothers. He had the correct answer for our Bible quiz question this morning. It was Cornelius.
WPCF, Panama City Beach.
With SRN News, I'm Bill Fleischman in Washington. The U.S. House votes today on whether to approve open-ended impeachment hearings against President Clinton.
Right now we have 73 degrees and some light rain. At your positive music station, it's 7:05.
We are your station for positive hits. We're FM 100, Christian Radio for Panama City, WPCF.
At such a positive music station, FM 100, our motto is, no way! We are not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, for we found for ourselves is the power of God and his salvation. To everyone that believes, and hopefully our music will help make a believer out of you. A lot of good music coming up. We're going to be hearing from Twyla Paris, Bob Carlisle, also Truth, and right now Chris Willis, and Nobody But Jesus. On your positive music station, FM 100, Christian Radio, WPCF. Good morning, 7:10 now.
Thanks, Mark, for another great job air-checking that market. We'll see you here next month for Part 3. I'm your MarketScope host, Phil Wayne, and next up, Musings from the Members.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors. Members may muse by calling the Action Line at 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day.
Hello, this is Wayne Ryan in Bradford, Ontario, reporting that a radio station in Welland, Ontario, CHOW, a country music station, which has been on AM 1470 since back in about the late 50s, is now testing on 91.7 FM and on its way to fully going FM, still with a country format.
Hello, Fred. This is Paul Burkhardt from Watertown, Massachusetts, on May the 8th of 1999. My wife and I have an idea to propose to you. For those of us that can't go to the National Radio Club conventions, like in Bridgeport, West Virginia, stuff like that, since the National Federation of the Blind have state affiliates and each affiliate has its own convention, why can't the National Radio Club have separate state affiliates, and each affiliate has its own convention sometime during the year, so that those of us who can go to who might want to go to a convention of the National Radio Club, but who can't afford a national convention, can go to some state convention. Has this ever been thought of? I think it's a very good thing. Let us know on a future issue what you think, Fred, and what everyone else might think, because it might be good to get some more members into this fine organization of ours.
This is Rusty Curry in Springfield, Oregon. It's May 11th. I've noticed something about KRVM, Eugene, which might be of interest to DXers. They broadcast at 1280 with 5,000 watts non-directional daytime, and I think 1,500 watts at night with a sharp null to the east. For at least the last few days, they've been going to daytime power and pattern at 4:45 Pacific Daylight Time, which is over an hour before the other stations boost up. I don't know if this will continue or whether they will boost up even earlier when June comes, but they have come up early at times in the past. If you want to try for this, they should be broadcasting World Radio Network at this time of the morning. That's all. Thanks.
Yeah, Ken Honestchuk, your sports editor in Joliet, Illinois, on Tuesday night, May 12th. I've been doing some monitoring of the radio a little bit lately. The one-on-one sports format on WIDB 950 Chicago will move to 94.3 in suburban Elgin on Monday, May 18th. Radio Unica, which leases time on 820 WYPA, is expected to move to 950, but I heard I haven't read a thing on Radio Unica about taking over 950. Just a brief note in the Chicago Sun-Times sports section last week. So we'll find out on Monday the 18th if 950 actually carries Radio Unica or not, or maybe we have a brief silent period. That's it for now. Bye-bye.
This is Mark Marino from Calumet City, and I discovered a station this morning as I woke up. Carrying CNN headline news, waited for the ID, and to my surprise, it gave its ID as WHFB, Benton Harbor. Well, no more 70s on AM, I guess. It's CNN headline news. Bye for now.
And that's our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And to answer Paul's comments about regional meetings, the National Radio Club is much different than the National Federation for the Blind. First of all, we're a club.
which means that any revenue we bring in for subscriptions and publications goes strictly back to the publications and services for the members. There's no profit derived from any of the money taken in. It all goes for postage, members' magazines, and publications. Now, as you know, unlike the NFB, we don't have employees or anyone that gets a paycheck from the club. It's all editors who are volunteers and usually have not only their time invested, but research and postage to bring you what you hear and read. Now, the same goes for the convention. The conventions are put together by volunteers who have made a guarantee of their time to host a convention. The funds to hold the convention are from the registration of members and surplus from the publication sales. But keep this in mind that when you get something from the publication center, it's fairly cheap. And the goal of pricing is just to break even for the members and the cost of books and tapes, so there isn't that much surplus. Now, this is why your DX audio service is still the same price that it's been ever since 1985. No other organizations or businesses donate to the conventions, nor do we have any corporate sponsors sitting behind the scenes. All the monies that come in for the convention are from membership. Now, my opinion, the goal of the National Radio Club conventions are as follows. First of all, it's a chance for all of us to meet before the regular DX season gets underway. It's a chance for us to sit down and talk and just kind of compare notes and, you know, really kind of rap about the things which are important to us. It's a fellowship and a friendship get-together of people who share the same kind of hobbies and interests and would like to meet up with the folks that they have heard or read about in the magazine. At our business meeting, it's a chance for the membership to bring forth ideas and suggestions. It's a member's opportunity to talk one-on-one with club editors and board of directors about the issues and give some insight to where they feel the club should be moving. Now, in many cases, people say that a convention is too far away or just too much trouble to go to. However, most conventions are well into the average attendance figures, but we still see members that are within an hour's drive of a convention that just don't want to participate. Now, since conventions are not put together by the club, its board, or its editors, it's really up to the membership to decide where the conventions are going to be held. We ask for a volunteer each year, and although there is a lot of work in putting together a convention, it is rewarding. Folks like Dale Hamm, Ernie Wesolowski, Wayne Heinen, and many, many more should be commended for their talents in assembling a program. Many of us have put together conventions in the past, like myself back in 1987 here in Lima. And unless some new folks take on the task, many of the same convention sites seem to pop up later in time. Now, there's nothing to keep anyone from putting together a regional or state get-together. They're done all the time, just like Ray Arruda's Massachusetts DEC get-together at his home. However, it's been a long tradition to have the club's total meeting over Labor Day weekend. And with the recent comments about moving the convention 2 weeks forward, we found out that members like it exactly where it is. Now, I will say this about attendance. It seems that conventions that are centered around a geographic area around Youngstown and Pittsburgh typically seem to have the most success as far as the number of people showing up. However, if you want to host a convention, anyone can, and you should make your wishes known to the National Radio Club Board in writing or by sending an outline of your proposed meeting place, location, and activities to Ken Chatterton. Be sure to do it soon so that the selection can be made and can be announced at Bridgeport. So my question is now, who is going to host the National Radio Club Convention in the year 2000?
There's nothing wrong with your set. It's just that foreign station on 891. This is the DX Audio Service.
Michael Condon sends word that he will be hosting a TV and radio DX get-together at North Star Valley, 40 miles north of Madison, Wisconsin, on June the 19th, 1999. He writes, "The house will be open from 9 a.m. and food and refreshments will be served until we break for dinner at the Crestwood Inn nearby. I will be arranging for a tour of the local radio stations for those interested in seeing those. I can also arrange lodging upon request. Bring your portable TVs and radios, etc. He will have antennas. Bring DX photos and scrapbooks, and he will scan them into the hard drive or disk for you to take home. Contact Michael at michael.condon@juno.com. That's michael.condon@juno.com for more information.
Hello again, sports fans. Ken Beck here in the sports department. And here in May, I'm going to give you the final ID of Chicago's one-on-one flagship station, because next Monday, the 18th, it will be going Spanish as a 20 Radio Unica in Chicago, technically WYPA, moves to 950.
Today, three NHL games, including Colorado-Detroit. The blood match continues. I don't want to see any blood. I'd just like to watch a good hockey game between two immensely talented teams. We have another hour to go. 800-777-2907.
Starting on Monday, May the 18th, you can hear it on 94.3 WJKL in Northwest Suburban Elgin, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. only. Continuing with Major League Baseball, the update information I have here, late March issue of Broadcasting Magazine that I found at the library, plus a caller from Los Angeles mentioned that the Anaheim Angels on 570 KLAC, sharing time with the Los Angeles Lakers out there, both around the same time. One of the teams is going to have to go somewhere else on the dial. The Oakland A's in English on 960 KABL. In Atlanta, when the Braves and Hawks are at the same time, one of the teams are going to have to go somewhere else. Most likely the Hawks on WSB, considering that they're in the NBA playoffs. The New York Mets on 660 WFAN along with the Knickerbockers. So one of the teams will probably have to go to FM or somewhere else in town for the games. And Spanish again on 1280 WADO. Many games will be broadcast there. In Milwaukee, the Brewers on 620 WTMJ, as well as the Bucks, one of the teams, probably the Brewers, will have to go to WEMP while the playoffs are on there. In Colorado, the Rockies in Spanish will be in 1150 KCVV. In the current issue of Baseball America, there is an article on adventures in broadcasting, mostly on minor league baseball. And due to its length, Fred might put it on After Dark series. But for those who are listening currently, I want to give you just a part of this. Voices you might hear. Lacey Lusk wrote the article, says, with a minimum turnover at the major league level, picking future league big league broadcasters is even tougher than rating the players. After talking with various announcers and people who hire announcers, here is a list of 10 prospects. John Doskow does the Fresno Grizzlies in the AAA Pacific Coast League. Rob Evans with the Norfolk Tides of the International League. Dennis Higgins with the Wichita Wranglers of the Texas League. Dan Karcher with Colorado Springs of the PCL. Jim Kelch with the Louisville Riverbats International League. Russ Langer with the Albuquerque Dukes. Brooks Melchior was with Columbus last year until the team switched radio stations, so I don't know if he's still with them. We'll find out eventually. Mark Nasser with the Wilmington Blue Rocks in the Class A Carolina League. Mark Neely with the Tulsa Drillers in the Texas League. And Andy Young with the Portland Sea Dogs of the Eastern League. And talking the talk here, many of these came from other sports, other countries or interests. The following is a look at the background for at least one primary play-by-play announcer for each big league team, and I felt you'd be interested in this. Joe Angel with the Florida Marlins is a Colombian native who started as an NFL 49ers fill-in voice. Brian Barnhart with Anaheim, the 34-year-old, worked for Oklahoma City from 1988 to 94. Marty Brenneman and Joe Nuxhall with Cincinnati celebrate 25 years together in the Reds booth. Tom Brenneman, Marty's son with Arizona, 4 years as Cincinnati's weekend sports anchor. Jack Buck with St. Louis worked for St. Louis minor league clubs before call-up in 1954. Skip Carey, Harry's son, joined the NBA Atlanta Hawks in 1972 and the Braves in 76. Herb Carneal with Minnesota left Baltimore to join the Twins in 1962. Joe Castiglione of Boston started on TV with the 1979 Indians. Tom Cheek of Toronto spent 9 years at Vermont radio stations. Jerry Coleman of San Diego, the six-time World Series champ, left to manage 1 year. Jacques Doucet of Montreal switched from the newspaper La Presse beat writer to the booth in 1972. Lanny Frattari of Pittsburgh, the Bucks' 23-year-old vet, started with the 1968 Geneva Senators. Antonio Guevara of Colorado is a native of Mexico who went to broadcasting school in California. Wayne Hagen of Colorado, an ESPN original, worked the American Legion series in 1979. One of the real veterans, Milo Hamilton, now with Houston, in his 15th year with his sixth big league club, has been on since 1946. Tom Hamilton with Cleveland joined Herb Score after college and some minor league work. Ernie Harwell started in radio in Atlanta in 1940. His 51st year in the majors now. Pat Hughes of the Cubs was in the minors for 5 years, and with Bob Uecker now for 12. Now with Chicago, of course. Jim Hunter and Fred Manfred of Baltimore, ex-CBS and ABC radio mainstays, joined Chuck Thompson in Baltimore. Mario Mpemba with California, with Anaheim that is, worked in Midwest and Pacific Coast leagues from 87 to 94. Jaime Harin, Spanish announcer with Los Angeles, 1998 Hall of Fame pick, attended Central University of Ecuador. Harry Callis in Philadelphia served his country in Hawaii and moved to the booth with the Islanders, the Pacific Coast League. Bill King of Oakland, a three sports star, 27 years with the NFL Raiders, 22 with the Golden State Warriors. Denny Matthews of Kansas City, in Kansas City since 1969. He was 8th in NAIA in pass receiving in 1965. John Miller, now of San Francisco, thrown into the fire at 22 years old for Charlie Finley's Oakland A's, or was it Kansas City back then? Bob Murphy and Ralph Kiner of the Mets. Jack's brother, a 369 homer man with the Mets from the very start. Eric Nadel of Texas, with the Rangers 16 years before becoming the number one man in 1995. Dave Niehaus of Seattle flew away from Los Angeles to join the expansion Mariners in 1977. Paul Olden with the Tampa Bay team broke in with Cleveland, later replaced Joe Torre with California back then. Eduardo Ortega, Spanish with San Diego, former Tijuana Potros play-by-play man in Mexico. John Rooney of Chicago White Sox, 4 years in AAA and 20 with University of Missouri basketball. Finn Scully of the Dodgers joined the Brooklyn club in 1950, a year from Fordham University. John Sterling with New York Yankees, former voice of the Atlanta Braves, NBA Atlanta Hawks, an 11th year in New York. Bob Uecker with Milwaukee, more than 100 Johnny Carson appearance visits boosted popularity. And Dave Van Horn of Montreal started in college in Virginia, has been with Montreal since its beginning. And I'm sure with the amount of time that Fred has allotted, you can listen to the next After Dark series, and I'll have Adventures in Broadcasting, which should be fairly interesting on all these minor league announcers and their careers. So until next month, when I have some fresh information to come by, take care away, Fred.
The DX Audio Service.
Science!
There's nothing else quite like it. Here's the chief editor of the DX Audio Service, Fred Vobey.
It certainly is not science, but the Federal Communications Commission is said to be on the prowl. And although there have been a few actions noted in the FCC's Daily Digest, many think that the FCC is simply not doing enough. Recently, at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, a seminar was given on FCC enforcement. Pam Harrison is the chief of the Compliance and Information Bureau and deals with issues such as pirate radio, EAS, and tower issues. One issue is compliance of EAS. Are stations complying?
Yes, CIB has stepped up its enforcement efforts in the EAS area. We've noticed, and our press release pointed out some of the major issues dealing with EAS. I'd say the top four are failure to log the tests, failure to monitor at least the two sources, failure to even have the equipment, and failure to not run the test. So given those issues and given the importance of EAS, we have stepped up the number of inspections we've done. I'd say we've done to date, given the stepped up enforcement, about 433. Now that's not including stations that come under the Alternative Broadcast Inspection Program. Those stations are being assessed under a different structure, but these are ones where we have actually gone out and done enforcement, done the audits ourselves. Some of the issues we have definitely found, the EAS equipment is still sitting in the box. Now, you can't call that a Y2K problem if you haven't taken it out and plugged it in. And, you know, EAS is a serious issue, and it is something that we do take seriously, and we don't think that no equipment or equipment in the box is a good idea. In terms of enforcement actions, those have stepped up as well. We've looked at least there are 10 stations that we're proceeding against right now. Four we've already taken action against, and two of those have already paid the fines, and two others on their way from our Office of General Counsel, the Department of Justice, to be pursued as a trial de novo. So when we say we're serious about this issue, we really are.
Another area is tower registration and the location of towers. How many towers do you think are not registered with the FCC?
Right now I can't give you an exact number. When we're talking about towers, we're not talking about just broadcast, but broadcast, wireless, any type of antenna structure that comes within our jurisdiction. And given that universe of towers, we're talking approximately 20-28% that have not registered. And when we say registration, it's not just merely filling out a form and saying, okay, I've done it. From some of the audits we've conducted, we have gone out to towers that were actually registered, but the registration number wasn't posted on the tower. Now, it's like, why not go that last step and put the posting up on the tower? I mean, it's not a brownie point, but the reality is that if something should happen, if the lights go out on that tower, if the painting and markings have started to fade and no one's really paying attention to it, then John Q. Public or the FCC should be able to get to that registration number and know what tower it is and to inform the owner of that tower. There's probably nothing more that you can take as a life or death situation, as we've had in two recent incidents where helicopters have almost flown into unlit towers. So again, it is a serious issue. There is a no tolerance policy. We are looking at towers across all services. The registration, all towers are supposed to be registered, I think it was last summer. So we are still pushing that. And as I said, it's not just the actual registration, it's the whole process, making sure that you're meeting all the environmental concerns, that if it needs FAA clearance, that that's been taken care of.
But if the station just rents space on the tower and does not own the tower, does that mean they're not liable for registration, lighting, or problems?
That's a good question. The Act was amended to include tower owners as being liable for towers. Up until then, it was the licensees, which most broadcasters, I mean, you know, probably own your tower. As I said, with other services, that's not always the case. Let's say if you're a floral company and you have a couple of trucks and you're using a radio dispatch, you might not realize you're actually on a tower. So the Act was amended to include tower owners as being liable. But that doesn't mean that licensees are no longer liable if they're on a tower and the tower owner is not fulfilling its obligations. So it's incumbent on the licensee, if you're not the owner of the tower, make sure your tower owner is compliant.
Finally, Pam, pirate stations seem to be on the increase. How does the FCC find out about pirate radio stations?
Well, we learn about unlicensed operators of pirates in a number of different ways. Oftentimes, it's a broadcast doctor who's complaining. It could be a listener who's complaining that they can't hear their regular station. We've even learned of them from other pirates who claim that somebody's just moved in 3 miles down the road and they're on their frequency now, so please get them off. And also in just doing our daily activities, sometimes we learn about pirates. How we filter all that information, sometimes it comes to us through the National Call Center, and that number is 1-888 call FCC. I hope I had the right number 8 there. Also, we get calls from NAB. People can call me at, what is my number? 202-418-1160. All that information gets filtered down to our field offices. I mean, literally, I get calls from people, and sometimes I'm sitting at the left, at the computer at the same time, typing up the information, putting it in the right field office address, and shooting it out. So in terms of getting the information out to our field offices to investigate, there's very quick turnaround on that. There are different types of enforcement tools that we can use when we discover an unlicensed broadcaster. We found that the majority of them, they just really didn't know. They didn't know that they needed a license. Oftentimes we'll visit an unlicensed station and they'll say, well, the guy I bought the equipment from didn't tell me I needed a license, or he says, don't worry about it, or, well, we heard there was, y'all passed a new rule, so we don't need a license. Isn't that correct? So a lot of it is an educational effort saying, no, this is what the act says, this is what you need, this is what we discovered when we inspected your station. So the majority of them do cease operations at that point. But there is a small percentage that feel that, well, I'm still going to broadcast. And in those cases, we have to go to something more of an enforcement tool than just a visit and a warning or a warning letter. Some of the tools that we use are monetary fines or forfeitures, forfeitures of property or seizure, or injunction. Now, for those last two, forfeiture of property or an injunction, we have to go to court and we have to go through the U.S. Attorney's Office in the various jurisdictions where these stations occur. So it's a real concerted effort between us, the Department of Justice, and U.S. Marshals, and we have to convince the judge that to allow us to seize the equipment or that an injunction should be imposed on the operator. If we go with seizure, that paperwork is filed under seal. There's a safety element there, which is one of the reasons we file under seal, and also the element of surprise. After a while, pirates begin to realize that something's coming down the road and the equipment is highly portable. So the last thing we want to do is to announce that, hey, we're coming tomorrow, and the equipment disappears. So that is why we file under seal. And that's often people say, well, can you tell me what's the status of the case? When are you going to go shut that station down? Well, we would be in contempt if we told you, well, okay, we filed the paperwork, it's under seal, and the court says we're going to go tomorrow. So obviously we can't tell you the exact day or time that we're coming out. Likewise, once we've actually executed the seizure, the paperwork is still under seal. And again, we'd be held in contempt if we came up to you going, and we shut a station down. So we have to wait until the paperwork is no longer under seal until we can actually put forth what has actually happened. Again, that's working through the Department of Justice. They have very strict guidelines about how we can release press releases. And there are attorneys, and as you all know, and as all of these attorneys up here would tell you, you should listen to your attorney. So that's what we do. So when we get the word from them, that's when we put out the press releases. So that's when most of you learn about the actual seizure of equipment. At that point, the station or the persons that are now missing their equipment have the opportunity to go to court and try to get it back. And so far, we've not been ordered by any court to return any equipment. So it looks like we're doing a pretty good job in proving our case.
Pam Harrison, Chief of Compliance and Information Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission. And on our next edition, we'll talk a little bit about obscenity. What constitutes an obscenity? What is indecent on radio? That's on our next edition.
This is the DX Audio Service.
And that just about puts the wraps on this edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for June 1999. Don't forget our contest. Also, don't forget, if you need some help in writing comments for the Federal Communications Commission's docket 9925, the Low Power FM. If you need some help, be sure to contact us here at the DX Audio Service, and we'll set you up with somebody who can help you along the way. Also, keep in mind that the AM radio log is out of print, but it isn't on disc. If you'd still like a disc copy, you can still order them from the Publication Center. Don't forget the convention coming up over Labor Day weekend. Start putting away those dimes and nickels. We want to see all our friends and family there at the 1999 National Radio Club Convention in Bridgeport, West Virginia. That's it. That's all. There is no more. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio.